Friday Afternoon Deploys. Will is in GitHub in case we get force pushed down the stairs.
It's the original crew in the house.
Yeah, it is.
Here we are.
We got the, was it us? It was just the three of us, right?
I think there was a Hayden once upon a time.
He definitely came in some, but I don't know. I think the first,
like,
episode was probably just the three of us.
Probably so, yeah.
Oh, man. We have to look that up.
It's wild. I know. I can look and see if it's in the show notes.
We're all three the ones with, like, some previous radio experience.
So, oh, that's right. So we're the radio crew.
The
broadcasters. It makes a lot of sense. What's up, Alan? Alan hasn't seen the fancy studio updates.
No,
that
I'm
we
stoked.
Talked
yeah.
about in the last one. It's not done yet. We're still working on some of the soundproofing, but
it's exciting.
Yeah. What do you think of these new mics?
I love them.
I don't know if you can tell when I was setting these up. We had the old crappy Behringer mics in here, side by side, so you could, like, put them. When you only have one to compare to. Plus, you kind of get some dirty sound in the room and the monitors, but they're nice.
Nice,
they're nice.
I like them. I like them.
And, we don't have the monitor, or the arms aren't clipped to the tables and falling off anymore.
Yeah, I missed the
That's
spring,
maybe one
the
of
spring
my
sounds.
The springs aren't there.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, there's a little, there's still a little bit of that.
A little
bit. It's not bong.
Right.
Man, I had Henry in here the other day, and he had a blast. Mm. He came in, and we were messing with all the effects on the board here. And dropping reverb on it. And he just thought that was the coolest thing. He like got it. That was the coolest thing for me. He was just like, Dad, make it sound like a big room. And I was like, that's how reverb works. Hell yeah. Hall reverb. Let's do it. Big ass room.
That's awesome.
And then we started messing with like all the slapback delays and stuff like that. And that was tripping him out. And then he was like convinced that it sounded spooky.
Mm.
And he was like, Dad, if Big Chris were in here, he'd be so scared right now. And so I recorded him saying that, and that's sitting here on the disc if you ever need to use that for a bit or something.
Oh, I love it.
We got Big Chris is scared.
Yeah.
Henry on the mic.
We need to figure out how to get Parappa back so that we can call upon
that'd be a good one.
Venti Chris's fears.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
through the whole office.
I remember the time I wasn't here for it, but I was at home and I triggered it on Seth while he was on a sales call.
Oh yeah,
I think
you blasted the one that you added, the one from, is it from Silicon Valley?
Yeah.
You
Failed
Napalm
Me?
Death. No, yeah. So there's the Napalm Death one that I added, and then I added You Fail Me, which is the Converge song, and yeah, both of them are very disruptive.
Yeah.
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 You lit Seth on fire. Hey, Sammy, I think Seth might be coming to the office party next week.
Hey, that would be awesome.
I know, I sent him an invite. He had texted me the other day. He was like, hey man, they were doing some due diligence on some companies they're working with, and he was like, you know, I'm not technical as shit. And he was like, I have a question, because he said they have a lot of people popping up that are faking in their industry. It's a lot of stuff going on, and I think he's still doing grain commodities and stuff like that. And so if you can imagine with world conditions and there being some grain shortages, you have some companies that incorporated overnight trying to get in on flipping beans for a profit. Mm. And he was like, we looked him up, and he was trying to investigate. So we did like a who is search. And found out that he got the report that was like, there are 8,000 other domains hosted on this computer. And he's like, does that mean it's bullshit? And I was like, no, it's just shared hosting. It's probably Squarespace or something.
Yeah.
Actually pretty normal. He's like,
yeah.
Oh, cool. How y'all doing? So I invited him to the party.
That's awesome.
So maybe we'll see him next week.
I guess you just like make a fake company. But like, how do you fake being in the grain business? You're just like, man.
Man, when you're just there's so many middlemen there.
Yeah,
it's like, how do you fake being in the software development in business when you've never built an app in your life? All you do is go, yeah, I got devs. That's it.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with this archetype.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Tyrell's hiring right now. He's living that send me your requirements lifestyle.
I get I get fakes in all directions in all my DMs at this point. Fake
it's
companies,
crazy.
Fake employees, fake everybody.
It is probably not unlike, and not to compare our industry to commodities, but can we suspend our personal beliefs for a moment about our own value to the world. Being a commodity is not inherently a bad thing. It's just a reality, right? There are all kinds of commodities because there's rice and then there's gold, right? And if you were to look at development labor as a commodity, it's definitely on the rare, expensive side of things. It commands a high price. But anytime you have a shortage, and there's been a tech talent and labor shortage in the U.S. forever, and it's, you know, just increasingly got worse and worse. I don't know. This sort of commodity type things come into play, Tyrell. It makes it where there's incentive for someone to come in going like, damn, companies are willing to pay out that nose to find literally anyone to do this work because no one's applying for the jobs, or, you know, everyone who is applying, their expectations for salary are very high because they're in demand. So there's room for me to get in the middle here and broker a deal and skim a little bit off the top. And it's, I think it's probably the same thing in the beans and rice community as what we're seeing, just in a different way, right?
Yeah. It's just I can see that.
Because, like, well, whether we think dev talent is a commodity or not, other people do.
Yeah,
right. And so they're going to treat it thusly and basically apply the same sort of economic theory to it. Because, you know, capitalism finds a way.
I was just trying to think of, like, what would be the fakes that I have seen. What would be the grain equivalent?
The grain equivalent?
Like, hey,
well, yeah. We've definitely got a couple of bars of gold that have come in that turned out to just be painted sacks of beans.
1,000%.
That's my analogy.
Yeah, we
it's
had
like,
to...
this isn't gold. This is just beans.
Yeah.
Painted.
Just regular old beans you can get anywhere.
Yeah.
Just like Costco, Sam Club,
these
kidney
are great
beans.
Great value beans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, these aren't even, these are like mislabeled, like house brand, small chain groceries. These are like IGA beans, you know. These are like Marvin's.
Man. Now I'm nostalgic bad. For IGA. Oh,
they tore down the Southgate one too. That was, I think that was my first job ever.
Oh, really?
There. Yeah. I was a bag boy.
Was that the one on 71 down here?
Yeah.
Like at 15th?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's sad.
I'll share my busting a bag of beans story from our recent endeavors. There was an applicant that I was fairly suspicious of being a front for an agency.
Yep.
And just like was a bad interview all around, showed up late.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't answer good questions.
I know where this is going.
And in their profile site, like they had a site kind of listing all their portfolio. On their portfolio site, they had a picture of them climbing a really big, beautiful mountain. And I was just like, sweet. And so I knew this one was dead in the water. I knew it was dead in the water basically when it started. Like I found myself, so there's the unwritten rule when you're in college or in any class post high school, I imagine, where if the teacher is so many minutes late, the class feels the freedom just to nope out.
Yep.
Like I was counting down. I was literally
watching.
You know,
we had the same rule with client meetings. Especially on the sales side.
Yeah.
And we're just like, you know what? It's been 9 minutes. We're getting one more minute. And then we just walk out of this meeting.
Yeah. So I was watching the clock like that because I didn't want to actually do this interview. I just didn't have high hopes for it. But I wanted to give them a shot. And towards the end of the interview, or at the very end of the interview, I was just like, this person is a sock puppet. And I was just like, hey, I wanted to ask, on your portfolio site, I see you've got that picture of you climbing that mountain, man. That must have been amazing. What mountain are you climbing there? And the applicant said, yeah. On your portfolio site where you list all your work, you've got a picture and it's of you climbing a mountain. What mountain are you climbing? Hold on a second. Let me screen share. So I screen share in Zoom, and I'm just like, oh, like I'm just like leveling up in just, and I screen share it. I was just like, right there, that's you in that picture.
Isn't that you?
You're climbing that mountain. That looks beautiful. That had to have been like such an amazing.
That would be
experience.
A life changing.
What,
yeah.
What
yeah.
mountain were you climbing? And he goes, and then he said something that sounded vaguely mountain namey. And I was like, awesome. Well, I mean, we love the mountains. I just came back from skiing in Colorado, and we're in the Ozarks, so we do a lot of mountain biking. So, I know that would be a really great experience. I wanted to see what you thought about it. So, all right.
Yep.
Thanks for your time.
The thing is that, like, it's one of those things that if you've climbed a mountain, you fucking know what the name of the mountain is.
Yeah.
I know the names of, like, 7 or 8 mountains Arkansas mountains that have like 300 feet of prominence that I have ridden a bike down or something like that. You know?
Exactly.
Like, hell, there's like popular hills where I come from. We were down in Hot Springs for a family thing last week, and like someone was trying to explain to me, you know, it was one of those like turn right where the Dairy Queen used to be type conversations, small town navigation.
Landmarks.
And I was like lost, and they were like, it's on McKinney Hill. And I'm like, shit, I know McKinney Hill. Yeah, I drove my car off the side of McKinney. That's where I crashed my Kia there. It's a very small hill. So yeah, I was saying,
but you remember
like,
it,
if
though.
You don't know instantly the picture of the mountain that you climbed that you put as the fucking masthead on your Wix website, you didn't climb that mountain.
Yeah.
Was his face clearly visible in
the
picture?
No face visible.
Oh, it's like a silhouette.
No face
That's
visible.
A stock photo,
That's,
man.
So there's like there's a now that we're
You should have Googled climb mountain image search. It was in the you know it was in the first 20 pictures.
Now that we're talking about sock puppets, there's definitely things that I recognize. Like no face in your photo.
Yeah.
I recently did some research on an applicant who had a cartoon as their LinkedIn profile. And I'm still trying to like get full confirmation. I pursue these things now. It's like a game. Like I want to make the robot reboot. So like I'm just like I like push for it. I called that dude on the phone, immediately like went beep. It didn't even ring once. It like rang once and stopped. I was just like, okay. That's definitely a faker as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, the no face in the profile. Netlify portfolio site is pretty suspicious to me these days.
Careful.
Too.
You know, Willow came to us on a Netlify portfolio site. It's popular in the front end world.
I won't rule it out.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not a, but there's like this series of things.
Yeah. It's like JavaScript device fingerprinting.
Sure.
It's you're not necessarily the same person just because you have that particular font installed, but if you have that font and that sound card driver and that IP address range, we start narrowing that down to to an archetype that's pretty identifiable.
Yeah, and again, like there's nothing wrong with using that.
You know what another one is?
There's a whole bunch of stuff.
If your resume or portfolio website express your capability in a particular technology as a percentage for no apparent reason whatsoever.
Yeah,
it's just like Vue.js, 93%. Like, of what? Exactly. This is a ratio.
All
we need to know
JS?
The denominator here. Like,
you've done all of it.
Yeah. You know that this is a job that requires you to know to never use pie charts, right? Like, that's part of doing data science adjacent software development. I'm going to need to know that you know why we use numbers for things. But I see that a lot. And it just, I think it comes from like templates.
Data-driven resumes.
Data-driven resumes.
There we go.
There it is.
It's resume-driven development. No, that's a different thing, actually. But it's something like that. There's like a template where some designer came up with it. This was really popular in like, I think you still see it. In like Bootstrap templates and stuff, where someone will come up with some archetype that's cool, and then like all of the community goes like, that one sold a lot on Envato Market, you know?
Yeah, I need that one.
That one sold a lot on ThemeForest. I'm going to do that in all my designs. And now, if you go look at any portfolio website, I guarantee at least half of them have like the little counter section, you know?
They
got the zebra stripes, and it's got when it scrolls into view, it starts counting up, and it's like, number of projects delivered, number of cups of coffee drank.
Number of cups of coffee.
It's like the other thing, which is the hero image with the typing thing, where it's like, I am a, and it types out like, web developer, delete, 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 delete. React Native developer, delete, 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 delete. Apparently, I don't know what the fuck I am. I keep having to change it. And
no
like,
labels.
That doesn't give me confidence as a hiring manager. Where you're like, I'm whatever I need to convince you I am. I'm like, can we just go with one thing and being good at it?
What are you good at?
Yeah. That's okay.
And it can't be grifting people.
No. I'm good at backspacing.
I mean, not only that.
That could be your side hustle.
Yeah.
So those things show up.
Yeah.
It does. It is apparent on the resume. And for whatever reason, we haven't gotten to the bottom of this yet. But there appear to be a lot of foreign contract agencies, right, that are definitely real people that you talk to in interviews, but clearly are like representing an agency somehow. And we haven't gotten anyone far enough in the hiring process to figure out how it reveals itself. Mm. But like it gets to the point where it's like, I am available for this time to this time and then a 7-hour gap, and then this time to that time. And I'm like, that's shift work.
And when they're in our time zone, it's just like, why do you have a 7-hour gap in the middle of your day
like
when we're 1 hour off?
You're in Eastern time, and we're in Central. You're in Toronto, okay? And they're all in Canada, is what we're seeing a lot of.
Interesting.
Canada is the shield that's being used. That's like, yes, I'm not a U.S. citizen, but I'm just right up there, eh? And I'm an hour off. I'm Eastern time.
I'll ride the moose down to talk to you about the
job. And they're like, look, it's a flexible job. I like that. I like that you came at me with that because that fits my lifestyle because I'm available to work from 9 to 1. And I'm like, cool with you. And they're like, and from 8 p.m. to 3 a.m. And I'm like, tell me about that last part. What's up with that? Where do you go for 7 hours?
Yeah, what is?
Yeah.
Is that when you sleep? Are you sleeping all afternoon and then getting up and then... What the hell? And then what do you do between 3 and 9?
Right.
The answer is it's two different people. Mm. Damn it. It has to be. So
Two different shifts.
So we're seeing a lot of these like sort of front for what appears to be contract agency work type thing. And like, I don't know. I'm not saying that you can't get software built that way. It just doesn't fit our model and what we're offering to our customers and our team. So, you know, good luck to them and stuff like that. But it's weird how many are coming from Canada.
Mm.
So when we see like Tyrell and I are now like instantly suspicious of people who live in Vancouver, which is sad.
Yeah,
that's
it's not
sad
a real
thing.
Place anymore.
Yeah, we're just like, ah, pretend developer, Vancouver. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like people are from there.
No, there's not 10 million people in that area, not real ones.
Yeah.
And that's a bummer, but it is what it is, at least in the jobs we're hiring for. So that's been really interesting. This did not exist last time we were hiring a couple years ago.
Right.
Something's happened.
Yeah.
It might all just be the same
stuff.
The same agency could be flooding the market. It could just be like 25,000 employees. You know
I've actually
I mean?
Had that thought because since we've now busted two applicants.
Plus, we keep interviewing them. So they're Lofty's a mark. We'll get one through eventually.
Well, I think that they've actually decided we're not because I've gotten far less of that inflow. Like, I'm seeing far fewer Canadians applying for jobs.
They're
at
like, shit, he asked about the mountain.
Yep.
That's a red flag. We've never recovered from someone asking about the mountain.
They know too much.
They moved you to disqualified in the CRM.
They failed the mountain test.
Yep.
You're training them.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
Scrub all adventure photos from all of our Netlify portfolio sites.
Yeah.
We've got to get rid of the mountains.
Keep it mundane.
The thing is, they could have said
picture
any
of
mountain.
A cup of coffee. Just not a furry. Like they're just like,
no fuzzy animal cartoon picture. Just do what Tyrell does, a pixelated image
I've
of
got
a,
an 8-bit me.
Yeah, an 8-bit version of your silhouette is totally fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't even do that. Like if I'm like my LinkedIn is my human photo. I definitely
same.
Don't want it. But I mean
just sounds funny to say it's your human
form. But I mean, like...
I always assume my human form on LinkedIn.
I mean, we're basically cyborgs these
it's
days.
It's true.
So.
Well, it's
the metaverse.
Well, never mind. I'm not going to tell that story. But there's people who've definitely been professionals in our industry that were basically a persona.
Yep.
And like their employer was cool with that. Like, they're just like, cool, this person... is a persona and they do their job well.
They
and
just
it was
get,
like
they're like on contracts, like their legal name is signed as like their handle.
Potentially. I mean, as far as like
just everyone. I would like everyone to meet our new senior React Native developer, ShadowFax69. He comes to us from Vancouver.
He's so legit.
he'll be working two shifts for us and he's somehow way more productive at 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. We don't understand. Yeah. His English is worse.
Yeah.
In the morning, but his code's better. We can't quite add that up.
Yeah. Our new director of marketing, the secretariat, is great.
The secretariat. That's good.
Yeah,
that's
I like
good.
That.
But yeah, so no, I mean, this person was a real individual, but they just preferred, like, in literally all aspects of their life to, like, be this, like, well, I mean, these, like, that it was, like, their identity, and so they just... And it was an early on thing before there were these kind of conversations taking place at a broad scale. And so this company was known for, like, they have this guy that works for them.
Kind of the edgy thing.
Yeah.
It's like the I'm imagining it something like, but not necessarily John McAfee with the like. I have people that work for me that won't work for you. And that's because we give them a cocaine stipend.
Yeah. That's not far from the company that I'm.
It's like we're willing to employ people who are good at their job that other people are not willing to employ. And we have
access.
We keep
them addicted.
That's right. And we keep John McAfee.
Yeah.
It doesn't even feel right making jokes about his weirdness anymore.
Not as good.
No.
Yeah.
We talked about him a lot on the podcast.
We have.
Before someone killed himself to him.
Someone needs to get some. Yeah.
or whatever happened there.
Yeah.
Someone needs to get Elon Musk some coke. Mm.
I thought you were about to say we need to get him on the show. And I was like, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Elon Musk?
Yeah. We'll call him up. We'll tell him that we've got a whole bunch of Twitter shares stashed under the chair over here. It's like, if you want them all, we have a few.
We have a few.
Yeah. I think one of my ETFs probably has a little Twitter in it.
Yeah,
you know?
Probably so.
We'll just like leave a little like a breadcrumb trail
from
California. Of little Twitter shares. You know.
I invest in the NASDAQ a little bit, you know.
you just see Elon Musk coming down the street, like one little share at a time, like, a share.
I got another one.
There's another one.
Was it James Woods, Family Guy?
It's
Pizza
Candy. That's the one, yeah. We'll have him on. But also, yes.
I think he could turn very... McAfee, if he got into the nose beers,
nose beers or psychedelics, would be interesting for Mr. Musk.
And terrifying.
Yeah, for all of us. Plus, he's got all those big drills that he's trying to drill holes in the Boring Company, which is like, you know, it's like most things that they're working on. There is some sort of normal-ish terrestrial earth capitalism aspect to it that kind of monetizes it despite it being a pretty far-reaching thing. But like the actual goal there is for when we terraform Mars, which is like when you look at it already kind of fucking crazy.
Yeah.
This is like we're going to build giant drills so that we can make underground tube rails that people can float really fast in because there's no friction and we use pressurized air to do it. And we'll go from San Francisco to L.A. And we're like, that's kind of fucking weird, but all right, here's $1 billion, you know, we'll see this through. But like the reality is just like, we're just designing the drills so we can build our underground Mars houses. It's like, shit. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of crazy.
They just got to fund them.
Mm-hmm. You know? Starlink.
Yeah.
$100 a month for crazy internet. And they're fucking putting like $40 billion of satellites in this. They're not getting that money back. They're just breaking even because that's how they're going to put internet on Mars, man. It's crazy.
I
listened to the Space Junk episode of How Stuff Works recently, and like all the like satellite breakaway. The fact that we have the technology to get stuff like old satellites out of orbit, but we're just like, but money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So just leave it there.
Yeah.
Like that's
we just have to put it somewhere.
Yeah.
If we got it.
It's pretty crazy that, like, as a species, we've decided just, like, leaving junk in space is cool. No worries.
Yeah, it's not on the Earth.
It's, they took my dad's philosophy to it, which every time that he saw some environmental disaster, you know, oil spill, trash, whatever it was, he was just like, it's a big fucking ocean. Like, it's really big. Yeah. It's really big. He's like, it's really big and fish shit in it. So,
it's not like, wrong.
How clean can
he's
it
not
be?
Wrong. Yeah. And when you take the circumference of the Earth and then you extend it out to the atmospheric boundary, it's significantly larger than the surface. And there's a lot of room out there. And it's very small pieces of space junk. There's a pretty cool website. I forget what it is that maps it all and shows the trajectories and stuff. And like, when those things are like represented as individual pixels around a, you know, 14-inch MacBook screen sized Earth, it looks like a lot of shit. And it is. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But those individual pixels are like representing something the size of, like, I don't know, the entire city of Melbourne. Mm-hmm. When the reality is that, like, it's the size of a tuna can. And so it's a little bit, you know, it's one of those things that, like, there's a bunch, but it's also so not dense. Like, when the Milky Way and Andromeda collide in however many billion years, but there's like a 0% chance of anything actually hitting anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like the galaxies are going to pass through each other, but they're actually so sparse that there's like a, you know, We have, you know, better chances of, there's a lot of things we have significantly better chances of than actually two stars of billions and trillions of stars colliding.
It's crazy about space. There's a lot of space. A lot of empty space
that's
out
the thing.
There.
It teaches you a lot about scale, right? Think about things on that size, that you can have something insanely massive but still so sparse that it can just pass right through.
My monkey brain doesn't do that.
We're not very good at analogies that go beyond like 2 or 3 powers of 10. Everything after that is just like, I don't know, it's a big fucking ocean.
How big?
Real big
shit ton of water in it. That's all I know.
All I know is this beer can's not gonna hurt it. Just fill it up and sink it to the bottom. That's me. That's my dad.
You're singing the song of my
I filled
people
it
now.
With water. Yeah, I sunk it to the bottom. Ain't nothing down there. What's down there?
I was
catfish, and they're fine. They'll eat it.
They love beer.
The crabs will use it as a hermit crab. I definitely was instructed to do that as a young man growing up on the Gulf Coast.
You grew up down there in the Texas coast.
I sunk
where the hermit crabs do wear beer cans.
It's true. Yeah, that's actually the state animal of Texas.
Is a hermit crab with a beer can.
A hermit crab with a Lone Star.
Say a Lone Star
on its ass.
Yeah.
I mentioned that episode. This was fun. My oldest son, we got him a birthday gift / summer project of a go-kart that needs a little bit of work to be able to run. And so it's just like, here's your birthday present. Congratulations. It also requires work. So you've got a project for the summer now too. And
here it is. I hope you know how to clean a carburetor.
Yep.
You'll learn.
Yeah. But we drove up to Missouri to get it. And on that drive, we were listening to that podcast. So it was like me and the boys on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And in that podcast, they became aware of the fun fact that you can light a fart. Ah. They looked at me like, is he serious, Dad? They were just like,
they questioned your ability to father.
They were like, can that really be true?
Jackass, they were like, so Jackass Forever, they light a fart underwater even.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's fucking next level shit.
Yeah.
A lot of research went into that, I'm sure.
Yeah. I guess they had tried it in one of the other movies couldn't.
Jackass movies, they have a team of researchers and writers working on that, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think Bam Margera came up with that one.
It's odd. Like, I had to watch it for the same reason I've always watched Jackass. The morbid curiosity of like, that's stupid. I wouldn't do that. But since you're going to do it, I'll definitely watch.
I'm definitely going to watch a bottle rocket go off in your ass.
And like, Johnny Knoxville gets clobbered by a bull. He fights a bull, you know, and he has zero experience for that. So he just gets concussions and a broken arm and stuff.
How old
and
is he
knocked out
at this
point? Yeah, he's older than us.
Yeah, man.
Well, yeah. And he's also lived the life that he's lived, which is at least a 2x multiplier on age.
It made me feel pretty good about my old achy hip and stuff.
Yeah, no shit.
Like, yeah, heck, those guys.
Like, there's something about Johnny Knoxville that brings me joy. I think it's like his laugh and his demeanor. But yeah, man, I feel like I'm just like, bro, we got to stop here, man. Yeah. I want to see you live.
Yeah.
I need you around. Just stop doing these things, please.
Like, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
You did it. You made it.
Yeah, yeah. This is like, cut it out.
You ran full speed into brick walls for 25 years and you made a career out of that. And like, it's okay. Sit by the pool.
Yeah.
You know?
We've got reruns now.
We want to see you transition all the way into like guest hosts on The View or whatever.
Yes.
It makes me wonder though. And I mean, you know, it's probable that they haven't made good financial decisions.
That's seems likely, especially in the case of Bam Margera.
Imagine that. Those who
and Steve-O.
Steve-O seems to have, you know, like, you know, you can't compare him to a normal human being. But if you compare him to himself, he seems to have turned a corner.
Yeah, he has evolved.
He's definitely not doing as many drugs, I think, now. I saw him on...
Got his teeth all fixed up. That was a big deal.
I saw him on Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson. One of my new favorite podcasts.
I don't know this one.
I don't know that's the podcast to talk about less drugs on. Right.
Yeah, well, Mike's like, he's got a weed company now and everything. And so it's Mike Tyson getting stoned and bullshitting with his guests.
That actually sounds great. I haven't heard this before.
It's pretty great. And so he's got Steve-O on there, and Steve-O's telling this story about how he was in, we'll call it LA, and he's looking
Vancouver.
For he's looking for
since we're making up fake fucking cities
and he's looking for a place to party, and he sees this house and he's like, I want to party there. And so he goes, knocks on the door, and Mike Tyson opens the door. And he describes it as like, I was scared for a split second because he reaches out his arm like a hook, but then grabs me by the arm and is like, dude, get in here. And immediately was like, you got any blow? And Steve-O was like, he's like, do I have blow? I have an eight ball in one pocket and a partial eight ball in another pocket, and goes on to tell you, if you don't know how much an eight ball is it's a lot.
Yeah.
And so I guess him and Mike lock themselves in a closet and do all of it. Is basically the story, but it's just funny because he's describing it. Mike's sitting there just going like,
yeah, totally.
Yeah. And he's describing this process where like Mike Tyson's taking Newports, emptying them out and just stuffing cocaine in there. Like, you know, I've done that with weed back in the day if I didn't have any papers.
You probably don't normally smoke the coke, Mike.
That's where Steve-O said he was just mesmerized because he was like, I don't think that's going to work, but it's Mike Tyson. Maybe he knows something I don't. Yeah. And he's like, I'll be damned if he didn't just smoke it and then proceeded to load another one.
I instantly, when you gave your Mike Tyson impression, was reminded of just the other day, someone just like, I got a random meme on Instagram from a friend that was like a picture of a woman holding a handbag, and then it was like Mike Tyson underneath it, and then it was a picture of Australia with Perth underneath. And I just like, literally, like I couldn't, it was a true laugh out loud kind of random burst moment when I put the math
took a minute.
When the math was completed by that, I burst out.
It's like a Plinko game. Ding, 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 exactly. Ding, ding, ding. Ah, there it is. Yeah. At the ninth Perth. Man, I definitely have reached the point in my life where my enjoyment of drugs comes through the vicarious retelling of other people's drug stories. Because I'm good on that.
Yeah.
I
finally narrowed it down. Finally got it narrowed down to caffeine, tiny bit of alcohol.
Small alcohol.
I don't even drink that much anymore, just a beer or two at lunch sometimes. A little THC and some CBD. And yeah.
It's all perfectly legal most places now.
Most places.
Alan, you're an upstanding citizen and model law follower.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm states.
Yeah. I'm basically a church mom now. Like, compared to where I have been.
I thought of you a lot, Alan.
Well, thank you.
As the vehicle I was in was rolling over.
Oh, yes.
I was like, this is what Alan feels like. I've heard, and now I empathize even more as I no longer, I walk even less straight than I did before. Mm-hmm. And my head still kind of hurts, and my neck's been jacked up for, like, I don't know, going on 2 months now. And I'm like, oh, this probably doesn't go away.
Mm-mm.
That's what happens when
it's like a sine wave. I'll say some days better than others. Some days you're like, oh, no,
I started in the rear driver's seat, and I finished in the front passenger seat.
Yeah, okay.
And I ended up with a pretty nasty gash on my head.
Yeah.
And afterward, the next day, because, like, it's just, like, it's so fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also not, right? But the thing is, like, I remember experiencing it, but also, like, individual details are very fuzzy.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons.
It's weird how the brain stores it.
Yeah. Well, also, I knocked it pretty hard, and I had a pretty good gash on my head, and I was just like, what did I hit my head on? And Chris was with us. He was also in the back seat, and he was like, me. And I was like, are you sure, though? I walked out of this. I just like stepped out of it. I must have been near a door, and they're like, no, the windshield folds up. Someone unfolded the windshield. And I was like, oh, that explains the stepping out. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, though. My head hurts. And then the next day, someone was like, hey, we found where you hit your head. And I was like, what was it? And they're like, the windshield.
Mm.
And I was like, really? And I'm like, yeah, there's kind of a big head shaped circle in the glass. And I was like, oh, well, I mean, that could have been it. And they're like, there was hair. Hmm. And I was like, oh, that was probably
that was my head.
That checks out. Yeah. That's where my head hit. it was a not fun experience at the moment, but it's one that I kind of enjoy the retelling of the story. It's been long enough. And I won't give the full details on this, but it was a client facing trip. And it was an ATV, not a vehicle, although it was...
I mean, it's a vehicle.
I was telling Paige afterward, and I was like, it's not like we flipped a truck.
Right.
And I was like, but now that I think about it, We also had like 7 grown men try and flip it over and we couldn't. And then we realized that that thing weighs like 4,000 pounds, which is exactly as much as my damn Jeep weighs. And I'm pretty sure it flipped with the same amount of vigor mm-hmm. and intensity as any vehicle
still have
would.
Velocity, gravity, all the forces at play there.
It just didn't have seat belts for me to work with on or airbags.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was kind of it was
probably pretty close to the tracker. You may not have been going as fast, which I don't recommend anyone doing that. But, you know, similar,
it depends on, you know, define fast, right?
Yes.
Because I think our ground speed was very low. But there was a significant amount of centrifugal force that was pushing me to the outside of the circle.
Yeah.
Yes.
And like you said, it's just weird how those experiences go. So I had rolled a geo tracker once upon a time, for those that don't know. And I was in the driver's seat, of course. And I noped out of the seatbelt and it didn't have airbags. So I woke up in the back of the thing in a creek bed. But yeah, it's, you know, that part of it, I get flashbacks.
Were you alone in the vehicle?
I was.
So this is the weird thing about me is I had other passengers who could tell me things about what happened. And I was like, I don't think that's what happened. Right. I'm like, no, dog, we were looking.
We were there.
There were people standing outside of the vehicle that could really give a retelling.
Yeah, I bet.
They didn't hit their heads.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. Yeah. They weren't in the chaos. Uh-huh. That's the thing. It's like you're do-do-do-do-do, and then bam. And then like just like, oh, what happened?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I remember thinking to myself, this damn thing feels like it could flip. And then she did. Like, damn, that really does not feel like it's planted on the ground.
That messes with your head after a while. You never want to think that thought again.
Uh-huh. Especially when you're not in the driver's seat.
Right, exactly.
It's a pretty shitty feeling, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. This could...
I sure do wish I were in control of the inertia here.
Oh, man.
Good times.
Yeah. Good stories to tell afterwards.
Before it all happened, I got to shoot a flamethrower.
Hey, that's pretty awesome.
That is a true story. I don't know if I told anybody else that part.
No, that got shadowed, overshadowed.
It's true. And in truth, it did. Mm. In reality, it did. But I did get to shoot a flamethrower. That's awesome.
Was
pretty cool.
Was it like a propane tank driven?
I think it was gasoline.
Oh, so that's like, like a backpack one then.
No, it had a small, probably like the equivalent of like a small propane tank size can, but you loaded it up. I mean, it was like one of those old Kilman camp stoves.
Yeah.
You like put it in there, except you didn't have to like pump it to pressurize it and aerosolize it or whatever. It had an electric pump on it.
Mm.
So it had an igniter button and a pump and it was battery powered and just... did its thing.
What was the supposed purpose of this?
Yeah, that's what,
To shoot a flamethrower.
Yeah.
No, I mean the flamethrower.
Yeah, but like burn the grass at the fence line or something.
I honestly don't know. The look of it definitely looked like the kind of thing that you went online and bought, and the ad was like, it's a fucking flamethrower. Like, it did not look like it was practical purpose.
Skulls on it and stuff.
Yeah. Kind of that kind of thing. It was kind of made, it looked like something out of a Call of Duty, like, loot crate. Okay. It was definitely for the look.
Yeah.
It was like real working flamethrower was in the description.
Nice.
Know? Not like, you know,
kills
this,
weeds.
This is an ag product brought to you by Monsanto to clear your land or something like that.
That's fine.
And not Monsanto wouldn't make that, but maybe Bayer, Coke Industries or something. Yeah. Anyway, it was cool.
It was a novelty item.
It was one of those things that I was like, I don't really want to do that. But the opportunity is in front of me, and I am not going to go home to my wife and children and tell them that someone said I could shoot a flamethrower, and I didn't. I can't live with that version of Casey.
Yeah.
He doesn't live that way.
Yeah.
I don't live that dangerously, and I won't ever buy a flamethrower, but you put a flamethrower in front of me. There's two, you know, it reminds me of that trip we took to Park City, which was like, do I want to get in the hot tub with our client at 5 o'clock in the morning, that guy that I can't stand, and like watch the snow fall over a ski valley? Not really, but am I going to? Fucking of course I'm going to see how that plays out.
Yep. Right.
Yeah. And that actually ended up being kind of boring, but you know.
Yeah, no flamethrowers.
Like, I did not want to set an alarm for before the sun came up to go sit in the hot tub with a client that in a very awkward situation.
Yeah.
But it was like, I'm going to have that experience for sure. And I felt the same way about the flamethrower.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can recommend if someone else has a flamethrower.
I'm glad it went well. Like, I've got a...
Considering how the next activity went,
yeah, yeah.
I'm glad that the incident happened with the rollover vehicle and not the flamethrower.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I shot a bow one time. Like, I haven't done that a lot.
You know, Paige did archery.
Oh, okay.
She's really wanted to get into it. And a recurve. She's not, or not, I'm sorry, not a recurve. What's the other kind?
Longbow.
Recurve.
I'm sorry, she shot a recurve, not a compound bow. Okay. That's what I meant.
So this was a compound bow, and it just came to mind because it was kind of a similar premonition. We're around a campfire, we're having liquid libations, and he just said something about a composite bow, and I was like, you know, I don't know if I've ever shot one. I've definitely shot a recurve. It's like, oh well, I'll go get it. Like, let's set up the target and we'll do it. And we're doing it. Something in my mind, though, is going, this is going to go badly.
Mm-hmm.
So right away, I'm just like, everyone I care about, don't be in front of me anywhere.
Dark at
right
night.
Now.
Yes. There's liquid libations.
Yes.
And this is the perfect time to see what we can do with a shitload of potential energy.
Yes.
And a sharp point.
Absolutely. Let's turn it into kinetic energy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
physics.
Yeah. And I did, but I pulled the string off the thing.
Oh, Lord.
I know.
Know your own strength.
I felt terrible, but yeah, and it was when I was doing farm work. So it was also one of those, like, you don't want to brag too much, but you get into situations when you're kind of living that life of like, I just hauled 300 pounds of something over to the other side of a thing, and now you've given me a compound bow. And and he's like, pull it straight back. And then I'm like, I'm trying, but my arm does this. Mm-hmm. And it's a triangle. and just whoop.
No, man, pull it right through your chest.
Yeah. Yeah. It came right off there. And I felt bad and he felt even worse.
Did it whack you really good?
A little bit, in the wrist a little bit. I didn't have any of the wrist guards on or anything, but he felt bad because he was just like, those sons of bitches told me that wouldn't happen. Like, and I guess he'd had it worked on or something, so he's going to take it back and have it worked on again. Because I felt bad, like, well, I told you I was probably going to break it. And you were like, you can't break a compound bow. And I broke it.
I was like, hold my beer, son.
That's famous last word.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
I had a friend wreck somebody's motorcycle after they said that. This guy was like, you need to take this bike I've got out for a ride. We were playing music. I was traveling. We were in California staying at somebody's place.
Yeah.
And I rode a motorcycle, and I took off and rode it for a while and brought it back. I was like, it's great. This big bike with ape hangers and
all this nice,
crazy stuff.
They go hog.
And then, he tried to get our drummer to do it. He's like, hey, man, you should take it out too, because he had said, like, our drummer – had never ridden a motorcycle,
was this the BDS drummer?
Yeah.
Mm. Nice.
He had never ridden a motorcycle, but he'd ridden like dirt bikes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was real hesitant. He was just like, I don't know if I can handle it. He's like, oh, you'll be fine. And he's just like, nah, I'm not sure. And I was just like, yeah, dude, it's a lot of bike. I don't know if you can handle that much bike if you've not ridden many.
Yep.
And the owner's again just like, nah, he'll be fine. And then sure enough, my guy takes it down the driveway and can't take it out of first, and just like chokes it straight into a ditch and barbed wire fence.
Oh, jeez.
We could do is be like, we told you he would wreck this.
Yeah.
Why did you make him ride your motorcycle?
You were warned multiple times.
This all could have been avoided.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, I don't know. This was kind of similar to the experience we had down on the farm, where you're just like, ah, shit, we thought this was more under control. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where someone's just like, ah, it'll be fine. And it's just like, oh, we're taking your confidence and we're using it as our confidence.
Yeah.
And then we go, fuck, everything's made up.
I thought he knew something I didn't.
Damn it.
Yeah.
This really was not a good idea.
Turns out I knew something he didn't.
Exactly. Yep, totally.
I almost wrecked a bike like that. I had a similar experience where a friend of mine, he had just gotten a brand new Honda, had it for a while. I say he just got it, but he had had it for a little bit. And we went to a Mexican restaurant, one of the local ones around here, had some... pitcher of margarita, and then we're out back just kind of like, well, you know, what are we gonna do now? And that's a neat bike.
Sounds
all
like,
that
this sounds like La Huerta.
Yes.
I know where you pitcher the margaritas in this town.
Yes.
Not that you can't get those anywhere.
No,
but there's one place that you actually want to do it.
Yeah, this is definitely over on Crossover.
Mm-hmm.
and And so I get on there though, and I go to let off the clutch, and like it was just enough that though I pulled back. I was like, no, 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 you take this and drive home. You know, I could just tell. Like I was like, I have only ridden bicycles.
Yeah. That's gonna say I have not. I don't know that I've ever actually.
So that was the weird.
Ridden a motorcycle.
As soon as it started to pull on its own, yeah. I felt out of control.
Yeah. Big engines want to go.
Yeah.
Like if you're not ready for a big engine to go, you've no idea because it's crazy. That's what happens with guys who get sports cars.
Yeah.
And they just go wad them up almost instantly because they've never had a motor that's just like, we're going, buddy. Yeah. Hold on to your butt.
And also like the ability to, you know, with a big engine sports car, especially a rear wheel drive. Mm-hmm. The ability, the ability for that rear differential to completely break traction all by itself.
Yeah,
that's one of those. And I don't know, but I kind of assume that a motorcycle, since they're, you know, you have a clutch and something resembling a, I know it's not the same as a manual transmission in a car, but it's something that's unsettling.
Gear,
so you've got a gear popper on your foot, yep. right? Yeah. But you have a proper clutch on the on
your
left
clutch,
hand.
Clutches
right?
in your clutches in your. It's been a while. Give me a second. Clutches
left.
In your left hand.
Yep.
Gears are at your left foot, so you're down for gear.
Yeah.
Down to go up and up to go down. No wait, up is up, down is down.
And I've ridden four wheelers that have the gear on the left foot. Mm. But no clutch.
Yeah.
That you could just speed shift.
I've had a couple of
you know, price. It's, it was like sort of like an it was like the equivalent of like an automatic with paddle shifters, is what it felt like. But I'm assuming that it's not, especially if you're not used to driving something with a clutch, that's a little bit unsettling because that's the same thing. I've driven manual cars forever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, especially I drove a lot of like small four cylinder manual transmissions, but I currently drive like a pretty large displacement inline six, and I've managed to get myself behind the wheel of some big V8s with a manual transmission. And that's a totally different thing.
Mm-hmm.
When that clutch starts to bite, it goes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you don't get to just let off the gas pedal. You can completely let off the gas pedal. It's like, no, dog, we're going.
Yeah, exactly.
I idle at 25.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, you just, you have that extra dynamic to it.
Yeah. If you're used to the
I have not throttled it and it is going.
Yeah.
You know what
if
I mean?
If you're used to the experience of it dying in first when you let off, well, you're just like, it'll be fine. And then it's just like, bop, bop, bop. It's like, oh, it's still moving.
It's going. How do I stop it? What do I do? I'm panicked. How many feet do I have?
Oh, man, that
The Jeep is fun because it's got a low gear transfer case. And that thing gets so much torque in the low gear that I can put it, first of all, if you're in four low, you launch out of second. Because first gear maxes out at like 2 miles an hour.
Right.
You know, you're at 4,000 RPMs or something. You can put that damn thing in first gear and like get out while it's going uphill.
Yeah.
You can like step out of it and check your line.
That looks pretty good.
And it'll just go straight up a hill.
Like a tractor.
Uh-huh, exactly. Yeah, it's infinite torque. But yeah, that's a different thing if you're not used to that. It'll startle you.
Yeah, it will. I drove a Dodge into a ditch. Not fast. It was the same kind of deal. Like I was just, you know, it's one of those, you know how to drive a manual? Yeah, I've driven a manual. Like six cylinder. And then, big old V8. And whoop.
Yep.
Into the ditch. Just like I knew it would. Yeah. that's the thing. As I've gotten older, I'm learning to listen.
You get
that
feeling?
Voice.
Yeah, that's right. You get that feeling. You go, nope.
Yep. Mm-mm. Nope.
Nope. It's target fixation.
Yeah.
Even if I am capable, my lack of confidence will cause me to fail.
Yes. Yeah.
Well said.
That's a big factor. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's I'm just old now, and I have no interest in pushing my comfort level, which is like why I like to hear Steve-O tell stories about doing drugs.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I go to bed at 9 o'clock, and it's great.
I do wonder where in the mind of those who like offer up their toys, like when the person goes, "Nah, that's probably not a good idea." Like, where in your brain do you go, like, "Yes"? I know you're not confident,
it's
and
like,
you're the person I want to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to.
I am confident for you.
I don't want to overstate. I do too, right? Okay, and I don't want to overstate my ability to psychoanalyze anything like that because I am not a professional. But I do feel like there's the dad that makes you drive the truck when you're seven in the background of that person's thing that doesn't realize that the person they're asking to do the thing is currently the seven-year-old. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I had that story where dad was like, "Hey, pull this truck from the front yard to the backyard through a gate that's like a foot and a half wider than the truck."
Ooh.
And it's very close to the road.
Oh.
Right?
How old were you?
Probably 10.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's probably not true. 12. I was definitely, yeah. I had never driven before, except for like on the farm.
Right,
you know, something small.
Definitely not through a thing.
No, yeah. Definitely not through a thing where I had to make like a multi-point turn to get it right, you know? And
was he in the cab with you?
No. He went to the backyard and just to wait and watch. Wow. And yeah, I dragged the inside corner of the fence. It was like a chain link fence. I drive just right down the... You know, I got the nose through,
yeah.
But I hit it on the side of the truck bed. Yeah. And I think it had dualies on it, so I hit the wheel well and everything with it. Fucked it all up. He worked at a car deal, and he borrowed the truck. That's the best part. That's the best part of that story. Yeah. And he's just like, why'd you do that? And I was like, why'd you do that?
I'm not the adult.
Yeah, I'm a child. Why did you borrow this truck from work? Why'd you stake your ability to make a living on me driving this truck through that hole?
Yeah.
And but the thing is that I had that experience and I've learned that. And I think a lot of people grow up in a world where it's like, you just learn through mistake making and stuff like that. Nah, you'll be fine. And then you're not. And you're like, oh, well, you know, welcome to life. You'll grow up.
You learn.
And then they get to being 40. And they're just like, yeah, man, you've already lived. You've already had that trauma. You've figured shit out and you know how to do it. And just go do it. That's how my dad taught me. And they don't realize that you're currently the 12-year-old in that situation. It's like, no, this is the first time and I'm a fuck up.
Yeah.
And then the difference here is that I'm an adult and I'm liable.
Yeah.
That liability is real.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it's similar to that. I think it's like chasing that same pride. That mm-hmm. they're like, I know how to do it. It's awesome. Oh, you haven't done it? It'll be awesome. And I will be proud of you once you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't think about the failure state.
The consequence side of that.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. And I look at that and I go like, well, on some level, that's kind of liberating. Because I'm the type of person that definitely sits more on the anxious side of the spectrum, right? Mm. And so I needlessly worry about shit. I had chimney sweeps at the house today, and I was worried about them fucking up.
Yeah,
they're professionals, and if they fuck it up, they're gonna fix it.
They they sing a song or anything like.
No, it wasn't like that. Just two normal Fayetteville dudes. One of them with a power drill with a giant metal brush on the end of it, and like you know they're just doing that thing out, and I'm like, oh, I hope that doesn't fall.
That's interesting.
Oh, man, I hope that doesn't come disconnected up there. What if it does come disconnected and they don't notice and I don't find out until I have a chimney fire or something weird?
I
don't know how to look at it and stuff like that. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, they're professionals. Go. I left. I was like, Paige, you're in charge. Henry, you're the man in the house now. Dad's going to work to worry about other shit. And so there's part of me that's like, man, the ability for some people to just like have zero concerns about things going wrong. I was like, that seems nice.
Yeah.
Now, once in a while, you end up with a crashed motorcycle over it. But like, you know, there's trade-offs there.
It seems peaceful.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like what is better? The like very low baseline of stress with very sharp peaks of like, oh, that went bad. Mm. Or a just constant like medium baseline of stress. Like what's better to have? I think, you know, like from like a cardiovascular perspective, it's probably the former.
I think so.
Like Tyrell over here, the ultra runner, probably has a resting heart rate of like 58 BPM.
Thereabouts.
Every once in a while he goes out for like an entire day and pushes 150 all day.
All day. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But like, you know, the thing's only got so many ticks in it. Probably better to spend most of your time down low than me with my consistent 80 BPM all the time.
I've got my lower number is almost the same as my upper number.
On your blood pressure?
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the constant.
Yeah.
Yeah. It never goes down. Yeah.
I'm sorry that I turned this podcast episode into Tales of Our Cardiovascular Health.
Dude, I hate...
We're just getting old and we don't know what to do about it.
No, I know. I'm psyching myself up to like finally go down that road and do blood tests and things like that. I've never had one. Well, no, that's not true. I've had them. And so that's the thing. It's complicated. For me, that type of stuff is tied to rolling a geo tracker and a Jeep Cherokee. So like there's massive amounts of trauma associated with such things. Mm-hmm. But I'm also 40 now and I need to know, you know, maybe if there's some of these systems we need to get in check, like the blood pressure, like that can affect everything.
Totally.
Is what the doctor said, and then offered to test it. And I was like, nope, not today.
That's one of those. Yeah.
I don't need more information.
Exactly.
To process.
Yeah. Let me sit on that one for a while.
I know that
I've enough variables already. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. That's definitely one of those, you know, if we look hard enough, we're going to find something situations there.
Yeah. You know, they're finding something.
Yeah. Paige the other day was just like, hey, when the fuck are you going to go get some life insurance? Cause you know, you're our income.
That's all.
I was like, that's a good point, and that's very reasonable. There's going to be a physical associated with that, and
or,
it's going to turn into a whole lot of fucking projects. You know what I'm saying?
Or they're going to extort you.
Yeah.
They're
going to be this motherfucker.
I'm in the same seat there. Like, so I almost had some a while back, which made me feel good because there is now.
I was like, let me lose like 40 pounds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, I'll get real healthy. It's like,
get the price down.
When I was in my 20s, it was like, this is going to be the year that I get really fit before summertime. And now it's like, this is going to be the decade where I get really fit before I buy life insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I'm at. Like, so yeah, I picked up Kung Fu again and you know, I'm doing pretty good, but I'd almost gotten some life insurance that did not require the physical. And yes, they extort you for it.
That's the expensive stuff.
Yeah.
That's the, they loan your own money back to you at the end kind of life insurance.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just
they're mitigating risk.
Yeah.
There. Yeah.
That's you're getting a tax-free vehicle usually to save your own money there.
Yeah.
And, you get, that's the ad you see on while you're watching Wheel of Fortune. That's
they're going to go make
there.
Yeah.
They're going to go make 15% on it and give you 2.
Yeah.
You know, which is typical bank shit.
And then the next thing, which I've got some recommendations for you too. We had talked about this before, is the estate planning.
Oh yes.
That's the other thing that's on my docket.
Mm-hmm.
To get nailed down.
You know, that's been on my mind due to recent events in my family and things like that. And I was talking to Paige's parents are about 12 to 15 years younger than my parents. So there's like a generational gap. Her parents are like squarely Gen X.
Gotcha.
Right. And, you know, they're in much better health and stuff like that. And I was like, please make your fucking parents get their shit together before we have to like deal with it. She's just like, oh, they have time. And I was like, that's what they all say. Yep. And the amount of stuff that you see people going through of like, I went through, so my mom passed away earlier this year, and I went through like just all these, and this might just be Arkansas country life, but like just piles and piles of paperwork of like handwritten letters of their wishes.
Mm.
And it's just like, cool. We couldn't do $75 for an actual will that's like notarized and signed because all I got is handwritten letters with like doodles in the margins and shit. And I don't think that I'm going to be able to take that and get a deed.
Yeah.
You know,
I was going to say, that's the other thing. Like a will is like, it's almost like an NDA.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, that's kind of what you wanted. And it'll sort of turn out that way.
Totally.
But it's like when next of kin's involved, it can get messy.
There's stuff. There's stuff there. The point is that like that's one of those things that like there's a concept known as Swedish death cleaning. Okay.
I'm not familiar.
This is a very not American thing, especially for those of us in generations that we are, where our parents not always, but tend to be a little bit more of the hoarder variety.
Mm.
Probably more likely than other generations. Mm. It's just like, you know. Like, if you grew up with the parents that grew up with TV dinners, it's just...
Right. Raised by the World War II generation.
Exactly. They had abundance, and they just, like, embraced it.
The Tupperware was made for them to put every ounce of their life into.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so, if you're around that stuff like that, you end up, you know, when it's time for you to inherit the property, the estate, or whatever, you just got all this shit to go through. And, like, for me, personally, I can't speak for everyone. I'm just like, I don't want any of this shit.
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah.
Nothing. I got all the plates I need. I don't need more plates. You know what I mean? I only got 3 at my house, like people, not plates. But
I was like, oh, that's very Swedish of you there.
It's not quite one
just
to
wash
one.
Wash it after you use it, I guess.
You know, it makes life a lot simpler. You need less cabinets in that world. But Swedish death cleaning, like in the place that brought us IKEA and some concepts of modern minimalism, they clean their shit out when they're like part of planning their estate. It's like, we're going to have less shit, so then our poor kids don't have to dig through all our crap.
What a novelty.
I know.
Yeah.
And I'm like happy about it. I'm like, that's how we're going to be.
Yeah.
Henry's not going to have to worry about this. This is the most morbid podcast ever, by the way. It's because I started talking about the rollover accident.
Yeah.
Now we're all the way into estate planning and planning for your death.
We got our mortality on the horizon now.
Can we pull back on the yoke a little bit? Yeah. Does anyone have
anything? Did we even talk about tech this time?
Well, we talked about fake engineers and stuff like that. What is the equivalent to Swedish death cleaning? Hand over a project.
Cleaning up legacy code.
Running,
you got to read Dead Snakes on there.
Of this stuff, that's good. This stuff has implications in software engineering. There's analogy to all of this. That's why we took you on that roller coaster.
Absolutely. Well, you just comment a method function out and be like, don't get rid of that function. I might need it later.
Yeah.
Don't get rid of it.
I cleaned up.
I know. It's handwritten will.
Yeah, I know. It's in Git history. I know I can go search for it later.
When I'm dead and gone.
I just want to be able to look at it over there and be like, yep, it's right there in that comment Tupperware.
I can
uncomment it at any time if I need it.
I kept that for you. You might want it.
Yeah.
Somebody
else might know what to do with it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I don't care. When I'm gone, you can do whatever you want with it. You know what I mean? But I'm keeping it. You know, and
I cleaned up some here a while back, though. This past sprint, I was reworking an ETL pipeline and had a whole bunch of functions left over that, I had that moment of like, I could leave them here, but I cleaned them up.
Now, we've had some code hoarders at Lofty. I mean, we've had them, everyone's had.
Yeah, everybody's.
You know, but we had some code hoarder clients, too.
Yes. That's what I was.
You were on one of them.
Oh man,
Just commenting out blocks code, like you know that this is what source control is for.
Yep.
You can remove the code from the code base without deleting the fact that the code ever existed.
Right.
It is a very soft delete.
Very soft.
Nope. I think one time we totaled up, it was like more than 50%. In some key modules, more than 50% of common out code. Mm. And it was usually like one working version and like six non-working versions of the same 400-line function, which was a problem in and of itself. Right. It's weird. Those two things tend to go hand in hand.
Yeah,
no unit tests, 400-line functions, and 10 versions of it. You don't ever see those things
incomplete
by themselves.
Thoughts.
Yeah. It was...
I slapped some basic testing on there and then Marie Kondo'd that freaking ML. Book.
And it turned out not a goddamn bit of it brought him joy.
Nope.
He thanked it for its service.
I thanked it and sent it on its way.
Mm-hmm, sent it to the Git Blame archives. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's
with a note that's just like, ask Ty where this went in comment.
It's in the safety deposit box.
Yeah.
If you want to find it. Still all there.
It's in a safe place.
Oh man. Well, we recovered that
briefly
at the end. We're unfortunately we're out of time. We spent it all talking about death. But it was fun. It's good getting you guys back together.
For this topic.
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Yeah, totally.
If we
live long enough.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, you never know.
If we get that blood pressure under control.
Yeah. Alan. No kidding.
Yeah, I'm gonna go email my life insurance guy.
Yeah, let me catch up with him. I'm the one who foisted him upon you.
That's true.
All right.
Inadvertently.
It's been a good one, and we'll catch you guys in a couple weeks or something.
Yeah,
we have some new people here soon.
Yeah, new voices coming.
We got new. We got new people we hired that are coming to town next week. I'm so excited about it.
I know.
We got to drag at least one of them onto the podcast.
At least one.
We gotta figure it out. We'll get a whole bunch of them.
We should make Justin come on just because he's done it remotely, but we should get him in the studio to talk about it.
Yeah. We could stack them up. You know?
We'll just bang out like 10 episodes.
Right.
Boom, mass produce.
Yeah. We'll just put a microphone out there.
Some B footage.
Yeah. Some B-roll.
Background noise. Yeah, we'll make a YouTube video. It's like background noise of your office, except it's Lofty's office.
Oh, I got something to share with you guys. That reminds me. We'll save it for the patrons, though.
Sounds good.
That's going to be on the Patreon content.
Premium.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
See you guys.
See you.
hustling. Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes for this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. For inquiries into guest appearances, sponsorships, or the current length of Alan's beard, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.